Donald Trump now has fired more veterans than any other president in recent history. How dare a five-time draft-dodging coward turn his back on the men and women who, unlike him, actually were brave enough to serve our nation in uniform? Trump and Musk may not know the first thing about sacrifice and service, but our veterans sure as hell do.
Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois has a few things on her mind of late.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
And good for her.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADRM, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have got a guest standing by that I need to get to momentarily here, but we have got still more news late today suggesting that Republicans are getting very nervous for some reason ahead of next week's special House special elections for two vacant U.S. House seats. Down in Florida, even though both of them are in very red districts.
Interesting.
We'll get to that in a bit. Also, Desi Doyen will be here with our latest Green News report.
Yep.
Including a remarkable omission in the administration's new U.S. National Threat Assessment report. But first, the Department of Health and Human Services on Thursday announced that it plans to lay off 10,000 employees as part of a major restructuring plan and shut down entire agencies within HHS, including ones that oversee billions of dollars in funds for addiction services and community health centers across the country. Cuts at those agencies like the Food and Drug Administration, Centers for Disease Control, National Institutes of Health, and the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services will result in a cut of some 20,000 federal jobs at the agency. The Department of Defense has already cut more than 17,000 probationary employees, though a federal judge has ordered that it was done unlawfully by the Trump administration and its Elon Musk Doge bros, and has ordered the Pentagon to restore those jobs. The administration has said that the IRS will see layoffs of as many as 6,700 workers, likely to severely impact the amount of revenue that the federal government will bring in. But few other, if any, federal agencies are facing as many job cuts as the Department of Veterans Affairs. At the beginning of March, according to an internal VA memo, the new leadership under Donald Trump said that it was planning a reorganization that includes cutting over 80,000 jobs from the agency that provides health care and other services for millions of American veterans. The memo instructs top-level staff to prepare for an agency-wide reorganization this August to, quote, resize and tailor the workforce to the mission and revised structure, whatever that means. It also calls for agency officials to work with White House's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, to, quote, move aggressively while taking a pragmatic and disciplined approach to the Trump administration's goals. Quote, things need to change, said Trump's Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins in a recent video posted on social media, adding that the layoffs would not mean cuts to veterans' health care or benefits. Well, that seems like a lot of layoffs. Is it possible they would not result in loss of care or benefits to veterans? Quote, this administration is finally going to give the veterans what they want, Collins said in the video. President Trump has a mandate for generational change in Washington, and that's exactly what we're going to deliver in the VA, he said. Veterans have already been speaking out against the cuts at the VA, where more than 25% of the VA's workforce is comprised of veterans. But from layoffs at the Department of Veterans Affairs to a Pentagon purge of archives that documented diversity in the military, veterans have been acutely affected by Trump's actions, AP reports this week. And with the Republican president determined to continue slashing the federal government, the burden will only grow on veterans, who make up roughly 30% of the over 2 million civilians who work for the federal government overall and often tap government benefits that they earned with their military service. Quote, at a moment of crisis for all of our veterans, the VA's system of health care and benefits has been disastrously and disgracefully put on the chopping block by the Trump administration, said Senator Richard Blumenthal, the top Democrat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, at a news conference last week. Blumenthal announced a series of so-called shadow hearings by Senate Democrats to spotlight how veterans are being impacted by all of this. Veterans are outraged, said Senator Tammy Duckworth, an Illinois Democrat who's an Iraq veteran and former assistant secretary at the VA. Quote, they said Donald Trump promised to watch out for them, and the first thing he does is fire them. In fact, nearly 6 in 10 veterans voted for Donald Trump last year, according to AP Votecast. Yet congressional Republicans are standing in support of Trump's goals, even as they encounter fierce pushback, including from many veterans in their home districts. Quote, they've cut a lot, but understand this. Essential jobs are not being cut, said Congressman Mike Bost, the Republican chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, during a teletown hall last week, noting that he is working directly with the VA's secretary, Doug Collins. Quote, we're all kind of wondering what's next, said Dan Foster, a Washington State Army vet who lost his job when the VA canceled a contract supporting a program that educates service members on how to access their benefits and VA programs. Others are angry that they have been portrayed as dead weight and cut from jobs that they felt played a direct role in helping veterans get health care. Democrats are already pressing their Republican colleagues to show their support for veterans. In negotiations to allow passage of a Republican government funding bill earlier this month, Democrats secured a vote to amend the package to include language that would protect veterans from the federal layoffs. That amendment failed on party lines, with Republicans voting against protecting veterans. Democratic Senator Ruben Gallego of Arizona, who is also a veteran, said he was unsure whether veterans would shift their political allegiance or not, but he said it is at least clear veterans are, quote, pissed. Last week, the nation's largest progressive veterans nonprofit organization, VoteVets, launched a multi-platform six-figure ad campaign targeting House districts around the country before next year's midterm elections, calling out Republican veteran members of Congress for being complicit and dodging their constituents as Elon Musk's DOGE fires veterans across the country. The ads, according to the group, will target Republican Congressmembers Don Bacon in Nebraska, Jennifer Kiggins in Virginia, John James in Michigan, Scott Perry in Pennsylvania, and Zach Nunn in Iowa. The campaign includes billboards calling out the representatives for supporting Musk and the Doge Bros for slashing thousands of veteran jobs. And it also includes 60-second video ads to run in those members' districts, like this one, featuring a group of veterans sitting in a circle and telling their stories of being downsized by Elon Musk.
I was at Barnes & Noble with my two children, 4 and 10, and my husband, and I received a text from my coworker, and he said, have you seen the email?
I served in the military for over 33 years, just accepted a new position in the VA, come into the office, fire up my computer, and I come back, and there's an email sitting there for me.
I knew what was coming.
I have not had a single negative performance review in my 10 years.
It feels like veterans are being personally attacked by Elon Musk.
I did not put my life on the line for some tech bro billionaire from South Africa to come in here and try to destroy our country.
We're gonna bear a lot of this cost with rising costs, inflation.
I'm literally donating plasma to buy eggs.
And our congressperson does absolutely nothing.
Stop Elon's war on veterans now.
That was veterans in Vote Vets ad calling on these members of Congress around the country to stop this billionaire from South Africa from stealing their jobs. Joining us now is Vote Vets senior advisor Max Rose. He's a former U.S. Army platoon leader and combat veteran who earned both a Bronze Star and Purple Heart during his tour in Afghanistan. He's also a former Democratic U.S. congressman from the great state of New York. In fact, from the right-leaning Staten Island in New York City. He served on the Committees for Homeland Security and Veterans Affairs. Congressman Rose, thank you, sir, for joining us today on the broadcast.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. I got a lot I want to ask you about regarding this campaign, the layoffs for veterans, the Vote Vets response to it. But as a former congressman, and more specifically here, a former platoon leader during the war in Afghanistan, I got to ask you about this remarkable signal debacle roiling in D.C. this week, if you don't mind. Congressman, if you had texted the specific time and means of attack against the enemy on a commercial text app like Signal, whether a journalist was part of the group text or not, what would have happened to you as a rank and file platoon leader?
Look, any level of the military would have been fired for that. But I think that there's a deeper point here, which is everyone likes the notion of disruption and innovation, and that's how this administration sold themselves. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is that what we're seeing is recklessness, destruction, and a disregard for everything that was actually effective. Why in God's green earth would they not just have, I can even understand a group text that uses means to allude to things that no one who's not on that group text would understand is happening.
Uh-huh.
I can understand. I think that would even be mildly reckless, but I would get that.
Uh-huh.
But when you look at what happened, where they are just openly talking about extraordinary events that are set to occur later on that day that have geopolitical, strategic, national security ramifications, it is beyond stunning. And it's exactly the opposite of what they sold themselves as. It's amateur hour. There are group texts going on right now in regards to March Madness, in regards to weekend plans, in regards to spring break, in regards to a whole assortment of other things that are relatively meaningless, comparatively speaking, and they occur with far more responsibility than this group text of a principals committee that is cabinet level officials. It's wild.
But his director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, his director of CIA director, John Ratcliffe, Trump himself have all said that there was no classified information here. What would you characterize? How would you characterize the type of information that you saw shared in those texts by the Secretary of Defense? Was that classified information?
Do you think so? What is the definition of classified? Right, classified are things that you would not and should not say in open settings. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So because it betrays it potentially negatively impact our national security in regards to ongoing operations or sensitive information or all the rest. So do you think that any of them would have gotten on TV and said, we are going to attack the Houthis in 2 hours?
Right.
No, of course not. And when someone suggested that they would do that, you know what they would say? They would say, well, of course not. We would never do that. We're not going to openly signal a pending attack. We're not going to give people an opportunity to prepare for something like that. Mm-hmm. And beyond that, we're not going to betray the ways in which we are communicating and planning for attacks. So, you know, and Congressman Jason Crow did a really magnificent job in his in a recent hearing, mm-hmm. demonstrating or illustrating the anti-aircraft capabilities of the Houthi rebel forces.
Mm-hmm.
They maintain sophisticated equipment that has taken down Reaper drones, that has the capacity to inflict other damage on offensive U.S. Military capabilities. So the notion that it is out of the realm of possibility that it would put service members in harm's way if they were aware of something like this. So that's point number one. Point number two is look, these are not independent, you know, isolated rebel forces. These are entities that have significant connectivity with some of our, harshest, most, you know, capable enemies, whether, you know, principally Iran, but you could certainly discuss others. But just the last point here, and I think this is the most essential. You know, whenever there are conversations being held like this, that our enemies are able to decipher a whole realm of deductions related to intelligence gathering, related to how we operate, because they are connecting that to other pieces of information that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So if they think that this is not sensitive, that this is not classified, then you know what? They should go on Fox News, which is the only network they go on lately, and just announce every pending attack. Just do that. Just do that. I mean, if this is not a big deal, just do that going forward.
Well, obviously, it seems little is going to happen to these guys, the Department of Justice. I mean, there was real laws here that were also violated. The Espionage Act, Presidential Records Act, Federal Records Act, all arguably violated. Yet the DOJ and the FBI suggest they're going to do nothing about this. But very quickly, and I promise we'll turn to the vote vets in a moment, but what should happen to folks like DefSec Hegseth, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, and the others here? Should they be allowed to keep their jobs? Lessons learned, as I believe Trump has said?
You know, I stand in support of Leader Hakeem Jeffries' point that particularly Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense, should be resigning over this. He was the one that made the decision to put extraordinarily detailed attack plan information in an open setting. And this is something that a junior officer would understand not to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, leaders are supposed to stand as examples of proper behavior, particularly when it comes to classified information. When Hillary Clinton was operating, the whole server issue, mm-hmm. Pete Hegseth and many others on that chain were the first to allege that she had committed actions that should result in her being imprisoned.
Yes.
They were talking about her getting imprisoned.
Yeah.
We're just talking about him resigning and returning to his weekend show on Fox News. So I don't think that's an incredible ask.
Max Rose, let's talk about veterans and the Vote Vets campaign in response to vets now being laid off and services and benefits potentially lost under Donald Trump and Musk and the Doge bros. The administration and their Republican supporters in Congress say nothing to worry about. The planned cuts at the VA, 80,000 jobs, are simply long overdue restructuring to a bloated agency for efficiency's sake, and no actual services, health care, or benefits to vets will be lost. Do you believe them?
Not for a second. So first of all, let's talk about the great tragedy of firing these veterans who have served in uniform, many of them served in harm's way, and then made an extraordinarily heroic and consequential decision to continue their service, not just to our great country, but in service of their fellow veterans by dedicating this next portion of their career to the VA. Donald Trump ran talking about how much he loved veterans and how much he was grateful for their service, and now has turned around and in the early days of his presidency has decided to fire tens of thousands of them. The other point to make here is that when it comes to the VA, there's no such thing as an essential worker and a non-essential worker. Whether it is the person manning the front desk, the person operating as a care coordinator, the med tech, the person cleaning the hospital, the person answering the phones, the law enforcement official helping to make sure the VA facility is safe and secure, all of these individuals represent absolutely essential tasks that directly translate to patient quality and healthcare delivery effectiveness. So it's a complete misnomer that you can fire 80% of the VA without impacting the quality of care. But the truth of the matter is what they want to do. The VA being the second largest federal government department, so they want to destroy it. They want to privatize it. And they claim that's because the VA is an underperformer, but the stats tell exactly the opposite story. The statistics say that the VA consistently records higher quality metrics compared to peer institutions and higher ratings of patient satisfaction. That's why the veteran community is almost universally aligned in support of not just preserving the VA, but building upon it. You know, I wish it was just this story about the that you alluded to, but it doesn't end there in regards to this administration's war on veterans. They decided to cut the PACT Act in the last continuing resolution, the budget deal, which was a monumental bipartisan piece of legislation to make sure that services are provided to veterans who are suffering the consequences of manning burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. They decided to cut the Small Business Administration, negatively impacting the a veteran's ability to access small business loans so they can start their next business. They've decided to cut HUD, which and grants related to services for homeless veterans. So the list goes on and on here. And what we at Vote Vets are committed to doing is making sure that people do not forget that when the next campaign comes around, which it always does, and Republicans go right back to this song and dance of saying that they are the party that supports veterans, they're the party that stands with veterans, it's clear that that's a lie. And we're going to make sure that everyone knows that it's a lie.
Well, let me ask you about that specifically. I mentioned during my intro, Max Rose, that a majority, 6 out of 10 veterans actually voted for Trump last year in the last election. And I'm always confused when I hear about, you know, members of the military supporting Republicans when it seems to be Democrats that fight to expand benefits for, you know, both active duty military and veterans. So as both a vet and someone who was able to get elected in a very right-leaning district in Staten Island, can you explain that thinking to me among so many of your fellow vets?
I would never judge someone based off of who they vote for and how they vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy that vets are continuing to vote in increasingly large numbers. And mm-hmm. I would hope for 100% participation. But what I would say is going forward, the dichotomy could not be clearer between one political party that is talking about not just preserving services for veterans, but expanding upon them mm-hmm. across the wide spectrum of the government, is also talking about wanting to hire more veterans, not fire them. Mm-hmm. You know, I when I think back to the young men and women that I have served with in the military, hiring a veteran is not an act of charity. It's the smartest decision anyone could make. Mm. And these veterans who are employed across the federal government, 50% of our federal workforce are veterans. Mm-hmm. They're just making a monumental contribution to the future of this country. And they're doing so in such a remarkably selfless way. When I think when you alluded to the Vote Vets commercial that we're running with these veterans who were fired. You know, I had the privilege of meeting several of them a few weeks ago, and you know, they had recently been let go from a range of different departments. And you know, what a sad, dark, low moment for anyone to experience. They have families, they have responsibilities, and they're wondering how to continue to fulfill those responsibilities. And despite that, despite being in such a scary moment, none of them want to talk about themselves. They want to talk about their fellow vet. They want to talk about the future of this country. They want to talk about continuing to fight for the values that we all collectively hold so dear. And that right there tells you everything you need to know about the quality of these people and why they represent everything amazing about America. They're national assets, not just national treasures.
Have you at Vote Vets or in your personal life seen evidence of a change of heart among veterans? I mean, I know that vets who voted against Donald Trump last time are unlikely to like him any better now. But are you hearing from Republican vets, Republican voters in general in your home district who are maybe seeing some light here, or at least having a bit of a change of heart, buyer's remorse over these past few months?
Look, this is a new administration, and the stakes of the issues that we're fighting for are so high, it feels a little quaint to be talking about poll numbers right now.
Mm-hmm.
What we care about is that this administration does the right thing and is held accountable for the decisions that they continue to make. So they still have an opportunity to reverse these decisions. They still have an opportunity to hire back veterans. They still have an opportunity to protect the PACT Act rather than destroy it. They still have an opportunity to expand upon services for veterans rather than destroy them. And they still have an opportunity to build upon our VA rather than privatizing it.
Finally,
and that's what matters here.
Finally, why is VoteVets.org specifically choosing to focus on this initial round of these people, these five particular Republicans in Nebraska, Virginia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Iowa?
It's a great question. Look, several of these individuals are veterans themselves. They're certainly in districts that have almost equal representation, politically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
There's every reason for them to be doing the right thing here.
And yet they're not.
And we need them to show the rest of the country that America, greatest country in the history of the world, still has a healthy democracy with two independently thinking political parties, rather than what looks like an entity that just follows Donald Trump blindly, irrespective mm-hmm. of the horrible things that he and his acolytes have chosen to do to veterans. So we're doing these advertisements because our sincere hope is that those individuals change their way of acting.
Now, I know you'd rather talk about the needs of veterans here than politics, but you were also, I should note, elected to the House originally in 2018 during the midterm elections following the first Donald Trump election. Do you see the political landscape looking forward as different, different political landscape this time around before the 2026 elections than the conditions on the ground back in 2018? When you won,
sorry, man. I'm not even 40, and I'm the resident historian for political transitions. It is very early on in this cycle. But what I will tell you, I think back to my friend Connor Lamb's incredible special election victory in 2017, mm-hmm. a very difficult Pennsylvania district, him an extraordinary Marine in his own right. And we are seeing signs that similar dynamics are at play here. A recent special election for a local seat in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. in a deep Trump district. So people should be digging deep. They should know that there is hope for Democrats to bounce back. They should know that there are extraordinary candidates raising their hand across the country, reaffirming their commitment to service, many of them being veterans. Volvets has recently announced a seven-figure recruitment and campaign support effort to be there with these candidates right from the get-go. Everyone's got to keep their head down, show discipline and resiliency and commitment. But we've got a lot of reason to believe that come this election, we will be able to flip the House and provide a viable check on the recklessness of this administration.
Max Rose is a former U.S. Army platoon leader and combat veteran, a former U.S. congressman from the great state of New York. He is now a senior advisor at VoteVets.org, the nation's largest progressive veterans nonprofit. Mr. Rose, really appreciate you joining us here today. I'll point folks towards the website at VoteVets.org if you want to support their critical work. You can also find them on the blue skies at VoteVets.org. And Max Rose, I see you over on Twitter, but I don't see you over on Blue Sky yet. Am I going to be able to push you over there soon?
Yeah, we'll work on that. We'll get there. Okay.
All right. I hear you. Thanks, man. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks again.
And I will harangue you again in the near future. Thanks, man.
Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I am very impressed with Max Rose and what Vote Vets are doing in trying to stop the tide of fascism by the time the 2026 midterms roll around. It will take a lot of organizing, obviously, between now and then. But I hope we can make it until then.
Well, he said we keep our heads down until 2026. Guess what? We don't have to wait till 2026 to capitalize on, what do you say, the recklessness of this administration or the fecklessness of this administration. Take your pick. We don't have to wait till 2026. We can wait till next Tuesday to see how things go. And on that, let's take a quick break because we've got some news about these upcoming elections on Tuesday, including the Supreme Court election in Wisconsin and two elections down in Florida for the U.S. House, special U.S. House elections that the administration seems to be really, really worried about. And we've got more evidence of that late this afternoon. We will get to that story and Desi Doyen's Green News Report coming up right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Ah! She thought she'd be able to run to the UN, but sorry, Elise. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. As mentioned at the top of the show, more signs that Republicans seem to be getting very nervous about the upcoming April 1 special U.S. House elections, two of them in the state of Florida, though it really does not seem like they should be quite so nervous. Nonetheless, the White House has now pulled the nomination of New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik as ambassador to the United Nations after Donald Trump expressed concern that Republicans could lose the red seat that she represents in a special election in New York. On Thursday, Trump said he had asked her to stay in Congress, please, rather than serve at the UN as ambassador amid concerns about the minuscule voting margin that Republicans currently hold in the U.S. House. They can only afford to lose about two votes on any particular measure that they bring up. Said Trump on his social media site, quote, "There are others that can do a good job at the United Nations. Therefore, Elise will stay in Congress, rejoin the House leadership team, and continue to fight for our amazing American people." We will see if she actually does rejoin the House leadership team or not. But as we discussed on yesterday's show, following the Democrats' stunning win in a Pennsylvania state Senate seat this past Tuesday, flipping a red seat to blue in a district that had voted for Donald Trump by 15 points or so just last year, and an earlier victory for Democrats back in February in Iowa, where they also flipped a red state Senate seat in an even redder district that had voted for Trump by more than 20 points last year, Republicans now seem to be very, very worried about these upcoming U.S. House special elections this Tuesday, April 1, no fooling, in two different congressional districts in Florida, though they really should not be so worried about it. Trump won both of those districts just about 5 months ago by huge margins, but still.
Yeah, the Trump administration keeps telling us how wonderful everything is going, that it's just the best ever.
How much America loves them.
Yeah, I can't imagine why they're nervous.
As the New York Times reports this afternoon, Trump hinted that he might make it up to Stefanik in the future. Sorry, Elise. in the future, you know, maybe another position in the administration. For now, he said, however, Speaker Mike Johnson was, quote, thrilled with the development. It was, the New York Times notes, a stunning turnaround for Stefanik, who was Trump's very first cabinet nominee and who had been expecting to be confirmed by the Senate easily just days from now. But the paper notes, it underscores the precarious position that House Republicans are in with such a narrow House majority that they can afford few defections, at least if they want to see their budget bill with those huge tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy, and yes, likely huge cuts for veterans and Medicaid, if they want to see any of that adopted, as they hope to, perhaps even as soon as next week, reportedly. It also highlights concerns among Trump and leading members of his party about their ability to win what should be safe Republican seats in districts like Stefanik's solidly red region of upstate New York. But it's so sad. Stefanik, who used to be a normal Republican, by the way, who actually opposed Trump for a while before turning into a Trump sycophant and stooge, and was rewarded for that with this big nomination to the UN. Apparently, she had been expecting that her long wait to be confirmed would finally soon be over.
Mm.
She has, over the past week on Instagram, been posting a nostalgic retrospective of her time in Congress as she prepared for her tenure there to end, and she participated in a farewell tour across her district in upstate New York.
So, in other words, they held off on her Senate confirmation until they had a sense of how this was going to go, and then Trump went and pulled the rug out from under her.
I am laughing, but of course, I'm crying for her inside.
I'm not. I mean, she used to be, like you said, a normie Republican, a moderate Republican, and she betrayed her district when she went down the rabbit hole and became a Trump bot.
Apparently, her district didn't care because she won re-election with big numbers. She was not going to stay in the House very long, at least as she had expected. She had given up her leadership position. She had already let many of her longtime staff members go. She has not been seated on any subcommittees because, you know, she was going to be going to the UN. Her focus has been on exactly that, on the next job, and she has been privately expressing frustration on the delay with her Senate confirmation hearing. And I can only imagine how she feels today.
Sounds like they didn't let her in on the plan.
Stefanik attended. She attended the first Trump cabinet meeting, apparently pretending that she was already in it. And when Trump addressed the joint session of Congress last month, she sat with the cabinet rather than with her House colleagues. Sad trombone. Her nomination had been expected to move ahead after the April 1 special elections in the U.S. Senate, when two Trump-endorsed Republicans are expected to fill a pair of vacant House seats in Florida, left vacant after the departures of former Representatives Mike Waltz, you probably heard of him, and Matt Gaetz, you probably heard of him, both of Florida. Both had resigned from the U.S. House after Trump selected them to serve in his administration. Gaetz later withdrew from consideration as AG amid resistance from colleagues on Capitol Hill who despise him and allegations of child sex trafficking and illicit drug use. But, you know, Republicans didn't care so much about that. They just didn't like the fact that he annoyed them. But the Times reports, there has also been growing concern among Republicans in recent days about the special election down in Florida's 6th district to replace Mike Waltz, the now embattled national security advisor involved in the leaked Signal chat about a military strike on Yemen in which he included a journalist. What was supposed to be a very safe seat has now become a competitive race, the Times reports, though arguably it was a competitive race even before the news about Waltz bringing the Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg into what was obviously a classified conversation about U.S. war plans in Yemen with the administration's top national security and defense officials all getting together to talk about it on this commercially available, apparently hackable Signal app. The move, according to Washington Post, spares Republicans a special election now to fill Stefanik's seat as well in upstate New York that Trump had previously carried by about 16 points. 16 points. They should not be concerned about losing that seat in a special election, especially, as you say, Des, that America loves everything that Donald Trump is doing. And yet, I guess they're thinking about former Democratic Congressman Connor Lamb, who Max Rose mentioned, friend of his, in our previous segment. Connor Lamb won a special election back in 2018 in a Pennsylvania seat that Trump had carried at that time by nearly 20 points. So, yeah, maybe there is reason to be concerned about all of these seats. Go figure. Trump has reportedly been livid at Mike Waltz for his role in inadvertently including the Atlantic's Goldberg in the high-level chat and at the apparently apparent difficulty at holding his seat down in Florida, though apparently not livid enough to fire him, to fire Mike Waltz, as he should. But we will see. He hasn't fired him yet, but let's see what happens after next week's election. We'll see. Quote, with a very tight majority, I don't want to take a chance on anyone else running for Elise's seat, said Trump in his social media post announcing that he was, in fact, firing Stefanik, at least from her nomination as U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Well, at least he figured out how to fire her. So there's that. Sad.
Yes, it's very sad. But, you bring up a good point that, you know, it is not over yet. The elections, there are hundreds, as I understand it, hundreds of elections, local, state, and federal, coming up in the next year and a half. So, you know, look to your local area, your local community, your state to find out what's happening. And that's a great way to get engaged and get involved in what trying to stop fascism.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if, by the way, even if they don't win either of these seats down in Florida on Friday, if they make a run for it right now, polls are showing the Democrat in Mike Waltz's district to be just about 4 points behind the Republican.
Hmm.
Again, a seat that, you know, should be easily Republican. I mean, if they end up close to tied, even if the Democrat there loses, it could in itself be a shockwave for the Republicans, realizing that, boy, maybe we picked the wrong horse by getting behind Donald Trump here. It could change the equation very much.
It's not like they weren't warned.
In D.C. after Tuesday. We'll see. We'll keep our eyes on it. Anyway, the Green News Report and a story that we didn't have time to fit into it today. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever, if you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We mentioned this story last week, I believe, on our
yes.
Green News Report. But things have gotten much worse since then, or at least they've gotten really bad again. And we didn't have time for it, for the update on today's Green News Report, coming to you momentarily. But grim news out of South Korea today. Authorities in South Korea are battling wildfires that have doubled in size over the past 24 hours in the country's worst ever natural fire disaster. At least 27 people have now died and hundreds of buildings have been destroyed, with the country's disaster chief saying that the fires had exposed the, quote, harsh reality of global warming.
Yeah.
Now, contrast that with what the Trump administration is now doing in regards to the very same climate crisis. More of which we'll get to in the GNR in a moment. But pointing to ultra-dry conditions and strong winds that have worsened the damage, just like in the Carolinas this past week and here in Los Angeles earlier this year, South Korea's Disaster and Safety Division chief said, quote, "This wildfire has once again exposed the harsh reality of a climate crisis unlike anything we've experienced before." Last year was South Korea's hottest year on record. The affected areas have seen only half the average rainfall this season, while the country has experienced more than double the number of fires this year than it did last. More than 89,000 acres have now been charred or were still burning in the largest of the fires, which began in the central Yusong County, making it the biggest single fire in South Korea's history. About 37,000 people have now been displaced, according to the Yonhap News Agency. Quote, "We are nationally in a critical situation with numerous casualties because of the unprecedented rapid spread of forest fires," the acting president Han Duk-soo told a government response meeting, adding that the high number of older victims, including those in nursing hospitals, was particularly of concern. Ironically, The military has released stocks of aviation fuel in order to help keep firefighting helicopters in the air to douse the flames across mountainous regions in the province, where fires have been burning now for nearly a week. More than 300 structures had been destroyed, according to officials, and the blazes were threatening two UNESCO World Heritage sites, Haho Village and Byongsang Confucian Academy, as authorities sprayed fire retardants to try to protect them. On Wednesday night, strong winds and smoke-filled skies forced authorities in the southeast to order evacuations in two villages, including a folk village founded around the 14th and 15th century.
When they say that these are the worst in the country's history, they're talking about in about 1,000 years.
In Yusong, about 20 of the 30 structures at the Gunsa Temple Complex, which was said to have been originally built in the 7th century, have now been burned. Among them were two state-designated treasures, a pavilion overlooking a stream that was built in 1668 and a structure built in 1904. Experts have said the fire showed extremely unusual spread in terms of its scale and speed, and that climate change was expected to make wildfires more frequent and deadly globally. The Climate Central Group, the independent scientists and researchers there, said higher temperatures amplified by human-caused climate change contributed to the existing seasonally dry conditions, quote, turning dry landscapes into dangerous fire fuel in the region and destroying thousands-year-old temples in the bargain. And with that grim news, our latest, no less grim, I fear, Green News Report.
Every single one of these reports that we have had has mentioned global climate change as a significant national security threat, except this one.
Trump administration omits climate change from the National Threat Assessment Report. Trump's EPA rollbacks of landmark clean air and water rules will cause significant harm to public health. Plus, U.S. Supreme Court closes the door on historic youth climate lawsuit.
All of those disappointing stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Defense Department is not in the business of climate change. We're in the business of deterring and winning wars.
And posting classified war plans to Signal. Am I right, Pete Hegseth? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess all of those years as a weekend co-host on Fox News makes it really difficult for the new defense secretary to understand the threat to national security that is climate change.
Yes, apparently so. CNN reports that earlier this month, billionaire Elon Musk's Doge bros eliminated more than 90 climate-related programs at the Pentagon. Defense officials and military experts warn that those cuts will harm U.S. national security, putting troops, military operations, and installations at risk, both in the near and long term. The U.S. military and intelligence agencies have long labeled climate change a threat multiplier, noting extreme weather disasters and water shortages increase the risk of political instability and terrorism around the world. But climate impacts also cost the military itself. A 2018 Pentagon study found nearly half of all U.S. military sites around the world are at high risk of extreme weather and climate disasters. In the U.S. alone, 128 coastal military installations are impacted by rising sea levels. In 2019, the Air Force needed $5 billion to rebuild two Air Force bases damaged by hurricanes. Experts say the Pentagon could save billions of dollars in the long term by upgrading military installations for resilience against accelerating extreme weather disasters caused by man-made climate change. This week, however, for the first time in more than a decade, climate change was omitted from the National Threat Assessment Report compiled by U.S. intelligence agencies. It catalogs worldwide threats to U.S. national security and American interests abroad. A Senate Intelligence Committee hearing this week on the Threat Assessment Report was primarily focused on the leak of military attack plans on an unsecured signal group chat. But independent Senator Angus King of Maine pressed Trump's Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, to explain the stunning omission. Gabbard once supported strong climate action as a Democratic presidential candidate. King noted that all prior threat assessments, including during the first Trump administration, detailed multiple climate risks directly affecting the U.S. military and national security, like climate damage, mass migration, famine, political violence, and destabilization.
You don't consider that a significant national security threat?
For the intelligence community, being aware of the environment that we're operating in is a given. What I focused this annual threat assessment on and the IC focused this threat assessment on are the most extreme and critical direct threats to our national security.
Well, she used to get it, but then she went to work for Fox News, and well, you know how it goes from there.
In other news, the Trump Environmental Protection Agency plans to eliminate its scientific research arm, purging more than 1,500 scientists whose work provides the scientific underpinning of most pollution regulations. A new analysis by The Guardian, however, finds that the Trump EPA's plans to repeal a barrage of landmark clean air and water regulations would deal a severe blow to public health. Rules targeted for repeal were set to save the lives of nearly 200,000 Americans from premature pollution-related death in the years ahead.
So now we're going to see 200,000 Americans die because we're making America great again.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court this week rejected an appeal by 21 young people to revive their long-running lawsuit, Juliana versus United States, in which they argued that the U.S. government violated their constitutional rights to a safe environment by promoting and subsidizing fossil fuels, despite knowing it causes global warming. An appeals court held the children did not have standing, ending their decade-long battle, but their court fight did help spark a global youth-led movement for climate rights.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Teach your parents well. Their children's hell will slowly go by. And
thank you very much. Desi Doyen is the producer of the broadcast. My thanks as well to Congressman Max Rose, now of VoteVets.org, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or you'd like to give it another listen or share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do it for free at bradblog.com. That's made possible by those of you who hit a donate button while you're over there or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You will find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. And you will find Desi Doyen over there as well at Green News Report. That's it. We'll see you there at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and sigh.